Morning. Today's daf in Bamsia Samech. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lona Zechon and Shemas Libig Avila B'Shmua. We are at the tail end of Nintesimid Beis, just a little bit to finish up before starting the couple of the last Mishnayos of the fourth parakah of Bamsia. We went off yesterday on the Isser of Onas Devarim. Gemara spent a considerable amount of time describing various forms of Onas Devarim. And then the Gemara launched into the story of Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim and the Cherem that was placed on Rabbi Eliezer for seemingly being Azak and Mamre. The Gemara doesn't use those words, but he poskin against the Rov, and we have a rule of Achrei Rabim Lahatos, and so he was placed in a Cherem. And Rabbi Akiva was the one who informed him, and all this the Gemara went through, but basically it was the second amud of yesterday's daf, and all this just to demonstrate the power of Onas Devarim, that when a person is mit, when the person himself is hurt with words, so there's a direct line between him and the Kaddish Baruch Hu. And we saw that yesterday when Rabbi Eliezer, normally his wife prevented him from saying Tachanun, but one day he got around to saying Tachanun, and as a result of that, Rabbi the Rabbi Gamliel was nifter. Tanur Rabbanan, we are the very bottom of the Amud. It's about six lines from the bottom of the Amud. Hama'anas Ager over b'shoshal avim. So if there's a ger, so a person converted, and you're ma'anim, and you hurt him with words, so you're in violation of three separate labim. V'alochs over b'shtayim. Now, if you're lochets, if you pressure him, in other words, it's more than onah, it's an actual abuse, so then you're in violation of another separate two labim. So ma'ishna ma'anad dechsiv shoshal avim. So the Gemara says, in terms of the numbers, so the numbers really don't work out, because by being ma'ana, by hurting him with words, the Torah says, ger lo sonu, v'chi yogurit ka ger ba'atzichem lo sonu oso, v'lo sonu ish es amito, v'ger b'chla amitohu. So we have three psukim as it relates to being ma'ana. As far as being lochet, namishloshuksiv, they are three separate psukim as well for abusing him. And the Torah says, lo sechaltenu, v'ger lo silchatz, v'lo yzielo kenoshe, v'ger b'chlalhu. So the Gemara says, fine, so we actually have three psukim as it relates to lechitza as well. So echad zev echad zev b'shlosha. So the Gemara says, fine. So we'll have to make a correction. The Braisa, actually is making reference to three and three. Tanya Rabbi Elazar gadol omer mimnei ma'izira Torah, melam mevav mekamos v'amelav b'mem vav mekamos b'ger. You know, many times the Torah tells us to be careful about the ger, right? Various gersos, whether it should be 36 or whether it should be 46. The point is very clear, however, that the Torah, you'll see, it's a common theme throughout the Torah, and that is be careful with the ger. Mimnei surah ra. So the Gemara's explanation is because surah ra. Surah ra, so he is... he had old habits, and it's easy for him to go back to his old habits, and so basically it won't take much to take him back to where he was if you offend him, assault him. So the Torah says you have to remember that you yourselves were gerim. So the Torah's reminding us that we have the same mum as well, meaning so we should not ever think that we have any type of superiority to the ger, we're gerim. So the Gemara says, "V'ayin adamin shi dezakif leizakif abidyukte." So lo name alei lechavrei zakif minisi. So Rashi explains, you have somebody who hanged themselves in the family. Okay, Rachman Litzlan. Yeah, it's basically whatever. It was either he was murdered, he was suicide, whatever the case was. You had somebody who was hanged in your family. So so don't say to him, or right, Rashi says, "Lo yom alavdo leben beso talali dog." So just don't use the word "hang" in any context. Meaning, because you say that word, it's insensitive. It reminds him of the person, of the fact that he had somebody who was hanged in his family. So in other words, it's an extra level of sensitivity that you should be careful about the words that you use. And even if the words are not a direct affront to the person, but it reminds him of something that, you know, it's a sensitive issue. So yeah, that's how careful you have to be with your words. Okay, Adkan. Okay, that takes us to the end of Onas Devarim. It doesn't really. We have the next mission, the mission after that. And also a description of Onas Dvarim, but a much subtler form of Onas Dvarim. And basically, it's a blend of Onas Dvarim and Ganevas Das, meaning we're going to be talking about for the rest of the Perek fair market practices. We're going to talk about advertising. We're going to talk about false advertising. Okay, very interesting sugya coming up in the course of today's daf. We start with a Mishnah. Ein ma'arvin peres beperes. Afilu chadashim bechadashim. You can't mix fruit together. Now Rashi explains over here is that generally speaking, when you sell fruit, not like I do, but when you sell fruit, so you advertise it to be coming from a particular field. And so what you can't do as a seller is that you can't, assuming that this is the understanding, you can't mix fruit together from one field and another field. Because the general assumption of the person when he buys fruit is that it's not just a fruit, not just a particular type, but coming from a particular field. And so therefore, you are going to be involved in a deceptive practice if you were to mix the fruit together from various fields. And so that's Ganeva's Das. The Ein Tzarich Lomar Chadashim Yesharim. Now it goes without saying that you can't mix new with old. Now in this context we're talking about wheat, and old is better than new. In other words, as it pertains to wheat, wheat is easy. Older wheat is easier to be ground up into flour. In fact, it'll be pretty clear from the Gemara. Again, this is well beyond my scope of knowledge and experience, but it'll be very clear from the Gemara that when you have wheat, you have to be miyashin. You have to age the wheat. So old wheat is better than new. So certainly it goes without saying that you can't mix new wheat together with old wheat and sell it as old. That is Geneva's Das. It's probably even closer to Geneva, meaning you are literally giving the impression that you're selling him a better quality, and meanwhile you're adding inferior quality to it. And that's what the Mishnah means when the Mishnah says Ein Tzarich Lomar, meaning previously we were just talking about a deception that doesn't change quality. Here we're talking about a deception that actually is a change of quality. That the Mishnah says that goes without saying. And then the Mishnah says, I'll tell you something in truth. It's an expression that we use very often in the Mishnayos. Not very often. It's an expression used in the Mishnah, and we know that whenever the Mishnah says the word be'emes, it means that this is the accepted halacha. And in fact, it's today's daf that tells us that basic yisod. We'll get to that in the Gemara. Be'emes amru b'yani tir la'ariv kash barach. When it comes to wine, so you can blend together different wines, and that is commonly accepted. And so therefore, as somebody who sells, you can do that. In fact, blending the two actually improves its status, and so therefore it's an accepted practice that improves the quality of it, and therefore for wines you're allowed to blend them together. Putting the sediment back into the wine, so the Mishnah says you can't, then the Mishnah says you can, and it's confusing, and the Gemara is going to touch up the Mishnah, so we'll wait till we get to the Gemara to explain that. Okay, you dilute wine, you can't sell that, meaning that is a unfair business practice. Elaim kein hodio, however, if you tell the consumer, you know, I dilute the wine, I added water to the wine, so then that's fine. Meaning the only issue over here is you're deceiving the public. Over here, if you're telling the person you did it, there's no deception. Now, velola tagar afa pisha odio. However, here's what you can't do, says the Mishnah. You can't dilute the wine and sell it to a middleman, to a merchant. The reason is she'enu ela l'ramos bo, because what the merchant's going to do is he's going to turn around and sell it as undiluted wine. So it is a violation of lifnei iver. Okay, Rashi at the end of the entire sugya uses those words lifnei iver. Rashi here does not, but I'll show you Rashi later on where he does. But that's what it is. In other words, so you're basically aiding and abetting somebody to mislead another person. The place where it is a practice to add water to wine, so then you do so. Meaning, if it is a general understanding that the wine is diluted, so then of course you're allowed to do it. Hatagar notel mehegranos venosan lasoch magura achas mehegitos venosan lasoch pitum echad. If you're a distributor, there is a very clear understanding that you're getting from various fields. So you can get from five different fields. If you're a wine distributor, you can get from five different places. So right when we buy our milk, right, the milk is not coming from one farm. The milk is it's a co-op. They're getting from different farms. It's a clear understanding that it's not getting that because you're a distributor, you're not getting from one supplier. So again, as long as it's understood that that's the case, so then the Mishnah says that's fine. Now you cannot make a conscientious decision to mix them together. Now exactly what that means. So Rashi explains that if there's a general understanding that you're getting from one particular supplier, so then you, the distributor, cannot mix them together, going against what is understood that you're getting only from one supplier. So that the Mishnah says you're not allowed to do. Tanu Rabbanan, we start with the Gemara. Ein tzarich lamar chadashos me'arba vishanos me'shalosh. So the Mishnah says, I'll give you a chiddush, and then, I'm sorry, the Gemara says, I'll give you a chiddush, I'll give you even a bigger chiddush. The Gemara is quoting a braisa. If you add the chadashos me'arba vishanos me'shalosh. Now, keep in mind the numbers over here do not indicate the value, it indicates the quantity. Meaning that, and we'll get used to this, coming up, we're on the threshold of the fifth parak, you'll just get used to this terminology. It means that your buying power is that for one sela, you could buy chadashos, you could buy new grain, you could buy four sa'a with that one sela, but if you're buying old grain, so you're only going to get three sa'a for a sela. So basically, simply put, so the yeshanos cost more. And again, because like we said in the Mishnah, when it comes to grain, you want the older grain. So it goes without saying that you, the merchant, can add new grain to old grain, especially if the new grain is cheaper. Okay, that's a light chiddush. But the Bryce says, I'll give you even a bigger chiddush. De'ein mishalosh de'ein ma'arvin, ela afilu chadash mishalosh, vishalos me'arba, ein ma'arvin, min mesha adam rotza liyashnan. Let's say, for reasons which I guess we can imagine, the new grain actually costs more. Now why? In other words, nobody wants new grain. You're going to have to age it. Yeah, it's true, but the new grain actually is a better quality. Meaning it's a clearly better quality grain, even though it's new, and even though you have to age it, and the old grain actually is cheaper, because even though it's ready to be used immediately, but it's just an inferior quality. So the Brisa says, I'll tell you even this bigger chiddush, and that is that you can now easily justify to yourself, and you can say, look, what am I doing over here? I'm adding not a better quality, but I'm adding an inferior quality to a better quality. I'm adding a better quality to inferior quality, so that it shouldn't be bad. Meaning, I could easily justify that. So the Brisa says no, because maybe what the person wants to do is he specifically wants a new grain. It is a better quality, and he actually intends on aging it himself. So the Gemara says, so therefore again, on both sides, you cannot deceive somebody by mixing together old and new. You're allowed to blend wines together, says the Mishnah, because actually it improves the flavor. Amar v'lazer ada amra. This means to say, anytime you see the words be'emes amru in the Mishnah, it means it is in fact the halacha. Amar Rav Nachman, uveina gitos shanu. Rav Nachman says, yes, you're allowed to blend wines together, but that is only during the season. So during the season, meaning when the wine is freshly fermented and the wines haven't really settled and the wine does not have a very specific flavor and taste of them, so then in its raw state, so then you can mix them together. But however, once the wine settles and once the flavor settle, so then mixing wines together is not allowed to do. That's an unfair business practice. Now, even though Rav Nachman says that clearly you're not allowed to do it, but the minhag nowadays is we do it. So the Gemara says, "Amar Papa diada v'kamachle." So Gemara gives a couple of explanations of why nowadays we allow it. So Rav Papa's explanation is because people know. And again, it's only an unfair business practice if you're deceiving the public. But once the public is on to you and they know that this is commonly done, so then it's no longer a deception, and therefore it's okay. Rav Acha b'rid Ravika Amar Hamani Rav Acha d'tan Rav Acha matir b'davar hanitam. And another explanation why nowadays it's okay is because we allow the consumer to sample. So once we allow consumers to sample, so then there's no unfair business practice. You're right? In other words, you want this wine? Fine. You want to sip first? Okay. And so therefore, it's no longer an unfair business practice to blend wines together. Now we're talking about adding the sediment to the wine. And the Mishnah says, don't do it. And then the Mishnah says, you're allowed to do it. And the Hamart Reisha in Marvin Klal. So the Gemara is bothered by a very simple kasha. The Mishnah is so serious itself from one line to the next. Now, v'chitem amai nosin lo shmarav dekamodilei. And the Gemara says, well, maybe when the Mishnah allows you to do it, that's because you're informing, you're notifying the buyer that this is what you did. The Gemara says that can't be the Pshat in the Mishnah. Because only later in the Mishnah are we discussing the heter of notifying the consumer, which means that means that in the Reish of the Mishnah we're not yet onto the subject of notifying the consumer. So that's not the pshat where the Mishnah allows you to add the sediment. It's not because you notify the consumer. Okay, so then, if that's not the pshat, what is the pshat? So Amalei Rav Yehuda Hachi Kama. So Rav Yehuda says this is pshat in the Mishnah. Ein ma'ar mishmar shal emesh b'shal yom v'lo shal yom b'shal emesh ava norsen lo ish shmar rav. Pshat in the Mishnah goes like this. When you're adding sediment from some other wine into this wine, that is an unfair business practice, that is deceiving. And furthermore, you're shortchanging the consumer, meaning because the consumer thought that he was buying just wine. And meanwhile, by you adding sediment, you're increasing volume, and it's what you're doing is deceptive. However, if it is the wine's own sediment, actually it's the sediment that this wine actually created, so then it's fine. Then you're allowed to, even though you separated the wine and sediment, but you can put them back together and sell them. That is a fair big business practice. Tanya Namihachi in the Gemara quotes the Brisa saying this is exactly the pshat. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shofar Yain Lechaver Harei Zelo Yarev Shal Emesh B'Shal Yom V'lo Shal Yom B'Shal Emesh. When doing Shefiah, Shefiah is a gentle pouring of the wine. Rashi here describes that when you pour the wine slowly, so basically what you're doing is you're separating wine from sediment. So you basically separate the wine from sediment, you can reconstitute the sediment back into the wine as long as it's its own sediment. You could take yesterday's sediment, put it with yesterday's wine. You could take today's sediment and put it back with today's wine as long as it's the wine's very own sediment. If you're going to dilute the wine by adding water to it, so as long as you notify the consumer that's what you did, so then you're fine. To which the Gemara comments with a maisa. Rava Isale Chamra Mechanusa. Mazge Tame Lohava Basim. So Rava was offered wine from the store, so before he sampled it, so he diluted it, and he tasted it, and it wasn't sweet. So he sent it back to the store owner and said, thank you, but no thank you. This wine just does not work with me. So Shadra Lechanusa. So Amalei Abaye. So Abaye says to Rava, but wait one second. What did you just do? You just handed a tagar. You just handed a merchant diluted wine. And our Mishnah told us you can't do that because you are violating the Isser in the Torah of Lifnei Iver. You're basically helping and abetting him, selling what people think is undiluted wine, but actually it's diluted wine. So Amalei, so Rava said in his defense, Mazga Didi Meida Yidia. My dilution, meaning I don't like strong wine. I add a tremendous amount of water. And everybody will know that it's diluted wine. It's clear. I mean that both figuratively and literally. Just one second. Now, what are you going to say to me back as a response? So then what the store owner is going to do is, so he wants to deceive the public. This wine is too diluted, so he'll add a little bit of extra wine, and that way he'll deceive the public. So, but Rava says, but look, there comes a point in time where you're no longer aiding and abetting, but that's basically his own action. Rashi says beautifully over here. What are you going to say now? I won't be able to sell water to a person because what is he going to do with my water? He's going to add some wine to it and he's going to sell this diluted wine. There comes a point in time where you have to say, I'm not aiding and abetting. That's he's doing on his own. The Isser in the Mishnah is when you're selling to the Tagar something that doesn't need any modification whatsoever, and then he could deceive the public with that which you gave him. Danny.
How could it be Lifnei Iver if you tell the Tagar that it's diluted wine?
No, because what he's going to do is he's going to turn around and sell it to somebody else. It's a fair point. The job of the merchant is to sell and make money. And so if you're giving him something that he can easily turn around and sell and make money with it, so I understand that you're not allowed to do it, but you're making it easy for him. You're making it much easier for him. Right, even the word Lifnei Iver may be a strong word. Rashi uses it, so I'm very comfortable using it. But Lifnei Iver may be a strong word. We could use a lighter term of Misayeya. Okay, in other words, but still, it's the same basic idea.
It's the same idea when they say the Roim, the Shepherd, people don't give them because they go...
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. Okay. Makam shenagulato mayim biyan yatilu. Tana lamechzel shishu revia. How much dilution are we talking about? So again, various minhagim. Dilutions are done sometimes at a ratio of a half, a third, a quarter. Okay, minagamakam. Amaravu vena kitoshano. And again, like we learned earlier, it is minagamakam. The last point of Rav was benagitos, that again this dilution is only done during the manufacturing season, the wine production season, but not a later point in time. Okay, Rav Yehuda Amar. Okay, next Mishnah, super enjoyable. Rav Yehuda Omer lo yichlek hachenvani klayos vegozim litinokus mimneishu margilan lavo etzlo. So Rav Yehuda says, you know what the store owner is not allowed to do? He's not allowed to throw out nuts. You know, back then there were no candies, right? Sugar is a modern convention. So how do you attract the children? So nuts was exciting. So Klausberg goes and Latinokas may issue Margin Lavo. And you know why he's doing that? So the kids will be hanging around. If the kids are hanging around your store, the parents are gonna be hanging around the store. Basically what you're doing is you're luring people to your store. Could not be a better time Mishnah than today and Black Friday. It's perfect. Timing is perfect. So you can't do that. That's an unfair business practice, says Rabbi Yehuda. So the Chachamim are here, and the Chachamim said, "What are you doing? You're advertising. You're marketing. That's fine. And right. And Phil already knows the Gemara. The Gemara is basically going to say, in defense of the Chachamim, what's happening? Your competition is trying to lure the customer in. You should do the same thing also. Okay. So and. We'll get the Gemara's going to say it. Yifchos is a shar. You can't undercut your competition. The Chachamim Omrim Zachal Atov, and the Chachamim say, "What do you mean you can't undercut your competition? If I have a merchant who's ready to undercut his competition, not only do I feel that that's fair practice, but Zachal Atov. Every time we mention him, we should give him a bracha. We love the merchants who try to undercut their competition. Lo Yavros agrees him Divrei Abishal. You can't. Sift through the now grisim is kind of like it's kind of a bean, and you can't sift through it and sell it as sifted bean and then overcharge for it. The chachamim said, of course you're allowed to do that. So that's an unfair business practice. In other words, if you're going to put the energy and effort of sifting the bean, so you could charge a little bit extra, knowing that it's not, you're not just selling the bean, but you're selling the bean with your labor. And so that Chachamim said, that's fine. This, however, everyone is in agreement that this is a deception. And that is to take the sifted bean, put that on the top of the barrel, giving the illusion that the entire barrel now is made up of sifted bean, and then sell the whole barrel of sifted bean. That's prohibited. That's Gnevas Das. We can go even a step further, by the way, probably just flat out Gneva, but that you're not allowed to do. Ein mefarches in lois adam velos abema velos akelim. And you can't make up, when you're selling either a person, an animal, or a kli, you can't make it up. Make it up, I mean that literally. Make up, meaning you can't dress it up so that it looks like something that much, much better than what it actually is. Okay, and when we say selling to the people, we mean evikanani. Meaning that if you're selling an Eved Kanani, the Gemara is going to finish off the parak with a great story. But when you're selling an Eved Kanani, you can't make up the Eved Kanani so that the Eved Kanani looks significantly younger than what he is. And, you know, same thing is true with the behemoth, same thing is true with the kli. You cannot dress it up in order to make it look much more presentable. My time under Rabbanan, so we go back over the Mishnah, and we're saying over first the discussion in the Mishnah, the debate in the Mishnah regarding advertisement and marketing. So my time under Rabbanan, Damarle, Anam Maflagina, I'm Guzi, Val Plik Shiski. You're bothered by the fact that I'm handing out nuts, I'm distributing nuts to attract customers? So I got news for you. Why don't you hand out prunes? You know how people love prunes? Okay. Okay, I know we all laugh. Nowadays maybe less so, but okay. The point is unchanged. In other words, okay, I'm trying to lure the customer, so you try to do the same thing as well. It's fair marketing practice. Lo yifchos es hashav v'chacham emam zachal atorv. Undercutting your competition. So now the The first Tana of the Mishnah, we're not given a name, but the first Tana of the Mishnah says you're not allowed to do that, and presumably because when you undercut your competition, so you're going to force your competition now to also sell less, and basically you're taking away from somebody else's profit. And to which the Chachamim say Zachar L'Tov. Now, the Mishnah doesn't give us a Svara. Why is Zachar L'Tov? Why is that good? The Gemara gives a Svara. My time at the Rabbanan. We're now on the top of Samach Amud Beis. Mishum Dika Marvach L'Tara. It's great for the market. Great for the market, Rashi over here explains. Because if you're the middleman, if you're the distributor, are now selling at a lower price, so now the wholesaler, he's going to have to lower his price as well. Basically, what we're talking over here is basic economics, and that is that when the consumer wins when there is competition, and everyone, yes, it's true, you're going to be knocking down the profit margin, but that's good. Meaning that you don't want people to hyperinflate the market and artificially inflate the market. And basically what you're doing is the competition is creating a reasonable profit that's made by both the middleman and even the wholesaler as well.
So why is that problem? That's because the goal, like you say, you cannot open the store if it's competition.
All right, that's fair. Right. It's a fair question. Okay, it's a much broader topic and I'm not prepared. Something is obvious, meaning the Gemara now is giving svara behind the sheet of the Chachamim who allow you to sift through the bean, remove all the psolus and sell it at a higher price. And the simple svara is it's davar hanira. It's obvious that you put a lot of effort and work into the sifted bean. And you're selling it now, a sifted bean. So you're increasing the price. That's not unfair. It's obvious that that you put labor into it. And so therefore, what you're charging is both the product and the labor that you put into it as well. And it's a perfectly fair practice. The Brice over here is going to be discussing dressing up an animal. Now, when we say dressing up an animal, obviously, the appearance of an animal to us is only exciting if the animal is a larger animal. And so what unscrupulous animal sellers will do is that they're going to make the animal look larger than it is and fetch a higher price for it. And this is considered unfair business practice, and you're not allowed to do it. And the Brice describes Misharvitin as a behemoth. Or we'll describe it better later on, but basically making the hair on the animal stick up so that the animal looks larger than it is. Ein novchin bikerbayim. You're not allowed to basically stuff the kishka of the animal so that it looks larger than what it is. Ein shornis abasa b'mayim. You're not allowed to soak the meat of the animal in water. In doing so, you're going to give it off as the appearance that it is better, fattier, than it actually is. And again, these are all basically dressing up the product so that the product looks better than what it is, charging more for it, and that is a deception and that you're not allowed to do.
Agreed.
My aim is sharvitin hacha, so how do you get the hair of the animal to stand up, which you're not allowed to do because it's unfair business practice. So hacha targimo mai dechizra. So a couple of different ways of doing it. Here in Bavel, so what we do is we give the animal the diet of bran water. Water soaked in bran, and you give that to the animal, and it basically causes the hair to stick up on its end. Don't ask for a better explanation. I can't help you any more than that. Ze'iri amar Rav Kahana mizafkatsa, and Ze'iri gives another explanation, and that is that you comb the hair of the animal using a brush, and basically getting the hair to stick up on its end, making the animal look larger than it actually is. Okay, now, from the Mishnah, what's very clear is that dressing up your product, making it look better than what it is unscrupulous practice, and you're not allowed to do that. Now, with that in mind, the Amoraim are basically going to now explain that there is a line. Now, where the line, how to draw the line, I don't know. I can only cite the examples of the Gemara. Where basically, there are, when you're selling something, you're allowed to clean it up. In other words, what you can't do is what is described in the Mishnah and in the Brice that we just learned, is you cannot actually make it look larger than what it is. But you want to clean up the item, make it look more presentable, that you're allowed to do. So Shmuel Sharei Lemir made Tumale Sarvala. So Shmuel allowed people who were selling scarves to put tassels on the end of scarves, makes it look nicer. Rav Yehuda Sharei Lekaskuse Karme. Rav Yehuda allowed the starching of the fabric before selling it. Again, that is not, that's just simply making it look cleaner, neater, better. Rabba Shari Lemeidak Tsarde. Rava allowed once again we're back at the hemp clothing. So he stretched out the fabric in order so that it looked cleaner. Rava Shara Litzlume Gere. Rava allowed the painting of various designs on the fabric so that it would look nicer. Rav Papa Bar Shmuel Shara Litzlume Dikule. Rav Papa allowed the basket weavers to paint pictures on the basket to make the baskets look nicer as well. So all these are acceptable. So the Gemara says, "What? Doesn't that violate the Mishnah, where the Mishnah prohibits dressing up people, animals, kalim, and basically it's misrepresentation?" So the Gemara says, "Lo kasha habechadati habatike." So the Gemara says, it's very simple question to resolve. Look, if the kli is already a new kli, and you're just making it look a little bit better, so that's fine. Meaning that's fine. But if it's an old kli, and now you're trying to make it look new, so that is a deception. That's a misrepresentation, and that's what the Mishnah prohibits. Okay, Pirchos de Adamaihi. Now we're talking about selling a slave, and the Mishnah says you're not allowed to dress up a person. Well, and we're going to describe what that means in just a moment through a story. And with the story, we end the fourth parak of Bamitzia. So there was this very old Eved Kanani, and his hair was white, his beard was white. And so what he do is that he dyed it. Dyed his hair and his beard black. And basically, he tried to sell himself off as a younger man. Also, Kamadarava Amarle Zivnan. So he goes to Rav and he says, "Would you like to buy me?" Now it's a little bit strange. The actual transaction over here, I'm a little bit confused by. It sounds like he's selling himself. That's not normally how it works. Normally, one person sells an Eved Kanani to another. Okay, so I'm a little bit confused, but still, the point is, however, is that he presents himself as a much younger man now that his hair and his beard are dyed black. So Amar Lei Yuanim Bnei Beisecha. So Rava basically declines and he says no. Meaning, I do have help in the house, but what I do is I hire Jewish help. In other words, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, "You aniyim bnei beisecha." You should have poor people in your house. What does that mean? You should have poor people in your house. Meaning that if you're going to employ somebody, so it's much better to employ Jewish people and help out the aniyei Yisrael. Yes, there's a halacha that you're supposed to help out aniyei akum as well. But in other words, but priorities first, you help out the aniyei Yisrael. So Rava basically says, "No, I'm not interested. I'm not going to buy you. I employ Jews." Also, coming to Rav Papa Bar Shmuel. So the same Eved Kanani now turns to Rav Papa Bar Shmuel and says, "Okay, I'm available for purchase." Zavne. So Rav Papa said, "Wow, great offer. He seems young. looks like a great deal." So Yom Echad Amar Lei Ashkan Maya. So first day of work. So Rav Papa says to him, "Okay, go get me a cup of water." So Azo Chaver LeRachel Adikne. So now he takes the dye off of his head, off of his beard, and he shows that he's a significantly older person. And the Eved Kanani now turns to Rav Papa and he says, "Amalei Chazi Dana Kashish Me'avucha." So he says, "You really expect me to go fetch you water? You see that I'm older than your father. It is not appropriate to ask me to do these kinds of work. In other words, I'll do other things for you. I don't know what they are, but I'll do other things for you." Okay. In other words, I'm right. I simply can't do it. And yes, I understand that this whole transaction may end up becoming a mekach tos. That's not the point the Gemara is making. The Gemara is just simply using this anecdote to show you how you can easily dress up a person that he'll look significantly younger than what he is. Kari Anafshe. Now, Rav Papa says regarding himself, you know, it makes sense. It's like poetic justice. Meaning when presented to Rava the opportunity, Rava says, "No, I don't." In other words, I hire Jews. I don't hire non-Jews. And I took advantage of the opportunity, but meanwhile, serves me correctly. And he quotes the Pasuk, Tzadik Mitzara Nechalatz, when you're a Tzadik, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves you from any type of Tzara, V'yavo Acher Tachtav. And somebody else is going to get the Tzara that was saved by the Tzadik. Now, frankly speaking, if you look at the Pasuk in Mishlei, you'll see that the actual Lashon of the Pasuk is V'yavo Rasha Tachtav. So, but When Rav Papa quotes the pasuk, I can easily understand that he didn't want to quote the pasuk verbatim, because then he'd be referring to himself as a Rasha, and you shouldn't do that. But still, the point is, however, is that Rav is on a higher level than I am. He was saved from the tzara, and meanwhile, I got that tzara. Hadron al-Chazav, that is the end of the fourth parak of Bab Metziah. Gives us the opportunity to start the fifth parak of Bab Metziah. Okay, it's a daunting task to the next 2 weeks of Daf Yomi. Okay, the fifth parak of Bab Metziah is a very difficult parak. It talks about the Isser and the Torah Ribbis of interest. So I said this back in the fourth parak, but I'm saying it now with more emphasis in the fifth parak. If you have a head for business and you understand how loans work and interest and we'll be discussing also future contracts and etc. So you'll love the fifth parak. And I'm not necessarily one of those people, but in other words, obviously my job is to present it as clearly as possible, and I will endeavor to do so. But it is a difficult parak. It's the gzerah de rabbanans that are coming up in this parak. Once you understand the business practice, you'll understand it. But they're challenging. It's just a challenging parak. It's 2 weeks, and let's begin. Ezu neshek bezu tar biso. The Torah, when describing interest, uses two terms to describe the isser of charging a Jew with interest. One term that the Torah uses is neshek, and the other one is tarbis. So so what the Mishnah seems to be doing is it's presenting it as two different scenarios. What we will do, if I can just spoil the Havamina, is that later on the Gemara is going to come around to the idea that it's not two separate scenarios. It's just the Torah using two different languages to describe basically the prohibition of not charging another Jew interest on a loan. So even though the Mishnah seems to be presenting it as two different scenarios, but that's a Havamina, but that's not so. So we start off with the first example, Amavasela Behei Dinarim. So the first example is very simple, meaning that I lend a Sela. Sela is 4 dinarim, and with the understanding that when you return it to me, right, I'm going to get back 5. That's called interest. That's called Aser Min HaTorah. So you're not allowed to charge interest. I should have said it as an introductory remark. I'll say it very quickly right now. As an introductory remark, so the Iser in the Torah of charging interest is only Jew to Jew. You can lend money to a non-Jew and you're allowed to charge interest. And mistaber. And it makes perfect sense. It's perfectly logical. Because, quite frankly, money has value. And if I'm renting an item, so I'm allowed to charge money for the rental of an item. If I'm renting money, so you're allowed to charge. Meaning, from a business practice, it is perfectly mistaber that you give somebody your money to make usage of your money, so you're allowed to charge for that. Well, we'll call it interest, but that's perfectly fine. So the truth of the matter is that there is no, from a monetary standpoint, it's not like onah. Onah, you're ripping somebody off. Here, it's fair. It's fair that you charge interest. The Torah, however, says that when lending to another Jew, you should not charge interest. It's basically, the Ramban says this, it wouldn't have been better if I quoted the Ramban inside, but the Ramban says on Chumash that because when you're lending to another Jew, it's an act of chesed, meaning that it's a mitzvah to give tzedakah, it's a mitzvah to lend loan free, and it's an act of chesed. And so therefore, even though by right, by financial right, you should be charging interest, but not when you're lending to another Jew. Treat him like a brother. It'd be like lending money to a brother, to a family member. When you're lending to another Jew, same thing. And therefore, you should not charge interest. I've heard a number of shiurim. I'm repeating it over. But I don't know who to give proper attribution to. But basically, presented this way, it's perfectly understandable that the halachas of ribbis are not found in Choshen Mishpat. Meaning, if you want to find in Shulchan Aruch where to find the halachas of ribbis, you don't turn to Choshen Mishpat. But where is it? Where they found Yeridea? Yeridea, it's a strange place to put the halachas of ribbis, meaning it's monetary law, right? So based on the presentation that we just offered, no, it's not monetary law. Meaning that If it were just strictly a financial decision, by right you could charge interest. It's just that the Gzeres HaKasav, the Torah decrees that when lending to another Jew, you should forfeit that interest. You should not charge interest. And that explains why the halachas of interest are found in Yeridea, not in Choshen Mishpat. Anyway, back to the Mishnah. So we gave the simplest example of not charging interest, and that is lending 4 dinar, I'm expecting 5 in return. Sasayim chitim b'shalosh, I'm sorry. Sasayim chitim b'shalosh. Giving two sa'as of wheat with the expectation that you're going to get three back. Okay, now obviously wheat is a commodity. But as we will learn together over the course of the fifth parak of Bamitzia, the isser of lending with interest not only applies to currency, but applies to commodity as well. Okay, this is a rabbinic extension of the isser of ribis, meaning the Torah only prohibited currency. It's a chachamim who prohibited commodity, and we'll discuss more of this as we go through the Gemara. Aser b'mishu noshech. So these are all prohibitions because they're noshech; they bite. Right? In other words, the word neshech in the Torah refers to interest, but the word itself actually means biting. And because when you charge interest, it bites, right? Chalila, Rahman al-Islam, but anyone, you know, who basically has credit card debt, so you know. What happens on a monthly basis is that it just keeps increasing, right? The interest keeps compounding and it bites, it hurts. So that's noshech. Ezu, tarbis. Now, what's an example of tarbis? And again, the way the Mishnah presents itself, it sounds like there are two different categories. Okay, but that point will be clarified later on. Harmar bepeperes ketzan. So an increase in fruit. So for example, lakachem enochita medinar zahav hakor vechein hashar amdu chitim balam dinarim. So the what you do is that you sell the core. Core is the 30 sa'a. It's a volume, and you sell it for a dinar, a golden dinar. And a golden dinar is equivalent to 25 silver dinarim. And v'chein ashar. And that was the market value, meaning at that point the market was fixed. And amdu chitim balam dinarim. And then what happens is that the price of wheat went up, and now it goes, that same core now is valued at 30 dinarim, 30 silver dinarim. So an increase of 5 dinarim. Amar lo ten lichitai, shani rotze lemochran. And so now what you did is you gave somebody money in order to buy 30 sa'a of the wheat. Now, at the time, the market value was 25 silver dinarim, and you gave him 25 silver dinarim. It's just that at that point in time, you didn't take the wheat. So basically what you did is you fronted the person money, and at the time, the market value was very clear. So far, so good. But now, when he's actually giving you the wheat, the price of wheat went up. So, velikach, I'm sorry. So, and you say to him, "Tein lichitai shani rotze lemochran." So, give me the wheat because I want to sell it. So, velokech behem, I'm sorry, shani rotze lemochran velikach behem yayin. I want to sell them, and I want to buy wine. So, basically, it's a guy who does deals. So, amar lo harechitecha suyos alai b'shloshim varelecha etzli behem yayin v'yayin ein lo. So now what the person says back to the buyer is, look, I know you gave me the money already, and I know, of course, I'm in debt to you. I have to pay you the 30 core of, I have to pay you the, I'm sorry, the 30 saw of wheat, but right now, can we do the following? Instead of giving you the 30 saw of wheat, can I exchange that for wine? Meaning I will be on the hook for wine. And as far as the wine is concerned, I'll give you, in other words, right now, the 30 saw of wheat, the core of wheat is being sold for 30 silver dinarim. So I'll give you its equivalency in wine. So the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to do. In other words, now the example that was given over here is a very specific and sophisticated example. It's not a very straightforward example. And when we do the Gemara, not today, but upcoming, so we're going to see why the Mishnah chose such a specific example and what exactly are the problems over there. Later in the Gemara, really Samach Beis, meaning not tomorrow's daf, but Sunday, we're going to explain much better why the Mishnah gives such a sophisticated example. Okay, in the meantime, however, the Havamina and the Maskana. The Mishnah presents the Isser of Ribis in really one of two ways. There's something called Neshech and there's something called Tarbis. And from the Mishnah, it sounds like they are two separate entities. So, Midashavik L'Ribis D'Raisa V'Kamefarash D'Rabbanim Mechlau D'Raisa D'Neshech V'Tarbis Chadim Ilsehi. You see what happened in the Mishnah? So the Mishnah went from the D'Raisa examples. Now, D'Raisa examples are, I'm going to give you X and you're going to give me X plus. So, first the example was of money. I'm going to give you 4 dinarim, in which you're going to pay me back 5. I'm going to give you 2 sa'a of wheat, you're going to pay me back 3. So those are very straightforward examples of interest, where I give you X with the expectation that you're going to give me X plus Y. Okay. And so those are very straightforward. But then the next example in the Mishnah, so where I am, where we're contracting a sale, I'm giving you the money, and then I'm expecting a certain amount in return, but you don't have to give it to me right away, and you'll give it to me after time, and after time the price went up, and again, the complicated scenario, and that's an issa derabbanan. Now, the Gemara expected us to know that. Now we do. That's an issa derabbanan, and the Gemara notes that what happened in the Mishnah is the Mishnah went from a issa deraisa to an issa derabbanan. So, mechal deraisa deneshef betar bitzchad emilsehi. So the Gemara says, it sounds like that Neshech and Tarbis really are one and the same. So and meanwhile, when the Torah describes Neshech, it does so in the context of money. And when it describes, Ribis, it describes so in the context of food. So the Gemara says, but really we cannot compartmentalize them. Meaning, it's not true that Neshech exists outside of Tarbis, and Tarbis exists outside of Neshech. Neshech below Tarbis Hechidami. Now, again, right now, the Gemara's thinking is that there could, in fact, be two separate Isurim. There's something called Neshech, and there's kind of something called Tarbis. And in the Hava Mina right now, here's what we think. Here's what the Gemara thinks. Neshech is talking about at the time of the loan. Like, for example, I say, I'll lend you four, and you're going to pay me back five. So at the time of the loan, that's since I'm demanding more from you than what I gave you, that's Neshech. Tarbis, again, this is a Havamina. Tarbis is at the repayment. At the time of repayment, I'm giving you more than what you asked for. Now, in this Havamina, is there a way of having Neshech without Tarbis and having Tarbis without Neshech? It's almost like a riddle. It's almost like a it's like a mystery how this can happen. So what the Gemara is going to try to do is wrap its head around this idea that yes, maybe there's something, there's Neshech without Tarbis and there's Tarbis without Neshech. So the Gemara gives a couple of examples. So let's say I do the following. Let's say I lend you 100 with the expectation that you're going to pay me back 120. Now, mi ikara kaimi mea bidanka, ulavisof kaimi mea veesrim bidanka. So now, so at the origination of the loan, where I make a very clear demand that I'm going to lend you 100, you're going to pay me back 120. So clearly neshech, meaning I'm biting you at the front end, where I'm making a very clear demand that I want 120 back for my 100. Meanwhile, at the time of repayment, so the prutas, now remember, prutas were copper coins. They were small, the smallest currency, and they were copper coins, and there was price fluctuation. And then at the time of repayment of the loan, it happens to be that the value of the copper coin went down, and so now 120 copper coins is, at the time of repayment, the same value as 100 coins at the origination of the loan. So, we have now constructed a scenario in which you can have Neshech but not Tarbis. At the time of the origination of the loan, it was clear that I was expecting there to be more payment than what I'm lending. Meanwhile, at the actual repayment, because of the price of the copper coin went down, actually, it ended up that the lender did not actually gain. So, the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, so isn't this a great example where there is Neshech but there's no Tarbis? So the Gemara says, no, it's not a great example. So if Ibasam Ikar Zalta Hare Neshech Hare Tarbis, Ibasar Bisofa Zalta Lo Neshech Ika Velo Tarbis Ika. Gemara says basically, you know, we can't split a loan apart from the origination to the time of repayment. Basically, we're either going to look at it from the point of origination or we're looking at it from the point of repayment. But we cannot split a loan that way. And so either Neshech and Tarbis is on the front end, meaning at the origination, it is interest in this case because you lent 100 with the expectation that you're going to get paid back 120, or on the back end at the time of repayment, where it's not going to be interest. So the Gemara says, "Vesu tarpis below nesh chechadami." Now the Gemara says, "Now let's try this the other way. Let's talk about a case where there is tarpis, but there's no neshach." Again, what the Gemara is trying to construct is a scenario in which at the origination of the loan, it's not interest, but at the repayment, it would be. The Gemara says, for example, Ida Ozev Mea B'Mea Mikara. I'm sorry, Mea B'Mea. I'm giving you 100 prutos with the understanding that you're going to pay me back 100 prutos. So far, so good. It looked like an interest-free loan. And then meanwhile, Mikara Kaimei Mea B'Dankal Osof Mea B'Chumsha. But now, the price of the pruta went up dramatically. And now, by getting paid back 100 prutos, you're getting back considerably more than what you lent. So, I'm sorry. So, again, what the Gemara now is imagining is that this is a good example of no neshech, because at the origination of the loan, fair. I lent you 100 with expectation to get paid 100 back. And then meanwhile, at the payback of the loan, because the pruta value went up, so now you're actually getting more. So, seemingly an example of no to neshech, but yes to tarbis. To which the Gemara says, no. Mikara azalt lo neshech ikav lo tarbisika. Look, if you're following the origination of the loan, you're good. And ibasar sof azalt, and if you're following the end, so hare neshech hare tarbis. So, the Gemara says that we cannot do that. When you're looking at a loan, you cannot separate the origination of the loan from the end of the loan. It either is... or it's not. So now, finishing up today's daf, so then why is it that the Torah presents to us two different words? So the Gemara says, V'lo tarpis v'lo neshech. V'lo chilken akasav el alav or alav b'shnei lavin. So the Gemara says that no, the reason why the Torah uses two different words is just simply because a person who is in violation of the sister in the Torah of lending somebody else, another Jew, interest, along with interest, is in violation of two lavin in the Torah. And, you know, generally speaking, the Rambam writes this, that the... You'll find that sometimes the Torah prohibits with multiple prohibitions for the purpose of emphasis to show us that it's a in other words, if we could scale, it's a really bad thing that you're doing lending another Jew with interest. So, but that's it though. In other words, but there is no real separation of tarbis and neshech. They are not two different concepts. Okay, and what we'll then do is tomorrow we'll continue with the discussion of the Mishnah, and then Sunday really we're gonna do a much better job explaining. I'll do a much better job explaining what that second case of the Mishnah was. Complicated case, sophisticated case, and we'll explain exactly what the issues are regarding that second case of the Mishnah.